Soon it comes the star attraction, so don't you budge. Here comes the law of action, here comes the judge. On your mark,
Monitor 68, and I'm Ted Steele. Anything can happen to this dear world. Steve and Edie might even sing it.
Please take your medicine, dear world. Please keep your pressure down, dear world. For us to thrive on each word your doctor speaks, he'll bring roses back to your cheeks. For you've been a pilot and
Ted Steele, and you're on the Monitor Beacon.
Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer presents The Shoes of the Fisherman, starring Sir Laurence Olivier, Sir John Gielgud, Oscar Werner, David Janssen, Barbara Jeppard, and Anthony Quinn as the first Russian Pope. When the future of mankind hangs in the balance, what risks do you take? The answer rests with one man, a man who walks in the shoes of the fisherman.
Reserved seat engagement starts Thursday, November 14th at the DeMille Theater.
My name is Jack Hayes. You can hear me right here on WNBC Radio 66 New York, weekdays from 9 to noon. If you enjoy groovy sounds, handsome, young, appealing men, join me. And when I get off the air, we'll all listen to Jim Gerhardt together.
WNBC, Radio 66, New York.
Here's a question about a Monitor guest you're going to meet shortly. He was on the 10 best-dressed list quite often. His voice was once labeled one of the 10 most easily identifiable in our country. And for much of his Hollywood career, he was among the 10 box office favorites. Know who he is? Well, you'll find out right after this Monitor music from Dana Valerie.
My mother says that little girls are made of sugar. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
My mother says my life will be a white ribbon. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
And on my tomorrow.
to Monitor's mystery guest. So long, Dow. Answer, Don Amici. And our reporter, Ted Lux, discovered that the several careers of the well-dressed, well-spoken, and, well, just plain successful Mr. Amici are moving ahead as strongly as ever.
Don Amici, we've seen you in a lot of different types of personalities and also in many moods as you perform. When you're not performing, what mood and personality prevails?
Oh, I don't know, Ted. I'm probably a pretty average sort of fellow. I'm not given to moods or fits of depression or anything like that. Nothing like that bothers me. I suppose I'm a perfectionist. I don't suppose I am. I know I am, and that perfection always, or striving for perfection, we know we never can get it, but we always strive for it. I raise thoroughbred racehorses, and it's actually a very expensive operation, but it's a satisfying thing for me because every horse that I buy is genetically exactly what my studies have indicated he should be. It really is more than a hobby. It's a thing that I really should have a little bit of an edge on other people insofar as raising thoroughbreds, and this is, of course, a tremendous challenge.
Don Amici, many radio listeners remember you, obviously, from the great Dickerson series with Francis Langford, a classic in radio and also a classic on record.
There were two made, Ted. Why no more was made, I don't know, because my royalty checks on the records stay very constant, stay very good. There's no abatement of monies that come into me.
When a comedy routine is done today in any medium, on TV, on record, etc., and it obviously is a put-on, and people accept it as a put-on, but in the verbal jousts that you and Francis Langford had, it almost seemed to be unnatural. Can you explain that?
Yes, it is a completely natural series, Ted, and the naturalness has worked both ways insofar as people liking and disliking the show, because it is so true to life that it offends many people because it startles them that people say things that they know they have said to one another, you know, under these exact same circumstances. They might have not used the same words, but the thought has been there, and the little bite and the little bitterness and the little harshness is there. And when they hear Francis or myself saying the same things that they themselves have done, it really startles them a little bit, and sometimes causes them to say they don't like the show, but they'll come back and listen. And other people, of course, who don't have this kind of a relationship just roar at it because they know people who have done these same things.
Don Amici, you've been just a delightful interview guest, and we thank you for being with us. This is Ted Lux for Monitor.
That's interesting, the way Don described the varied reactions to the Beckersons. Here's a chance to check your own sense of humor and the wear and tear on your marital bliss. Don Amici and Francis Langford as John and Blanche the Bickersons.
You got your plane ticket?
No, I didn't have time to pick it up. I'll get it at the airport.
What are you going to do for money?
I've got enough. There's plenty in the sugar bowl.
There's nothing in the sugar bowl.
There is, too. I looked last night.
You didn't look tonight.
Well, I'm not going to get up and look. Blanche, you didn't.
Didn't I?
You wouldn't take
that. You don't really have to make this trip, John, and I was just thinking...
The money, Blanche.
Yes, well, I have an opportunity to get a sweet little hat. You can wear it with the brim up or you can turn it down. It's $50.
Turn it down.
Well, I was thinking...
Blanche, stop thinking so much. Where is my plane fare?
I haven't got it, John.
What? Oh, Blanche, don't tell me you spent it on something foolish.
No, I gave it to a bookbinder.
A bookbinder? What do we need with a bookbinder? Our book is in perfect condition.
Not that kind of a bookbinder. This man goes to the racetrack. He's a trout.
Trout? Racetrack? Oh, Blanche, did you bet that money with a bookmaker?
I was doing it for you, John. I wanted to make enough money so you could buy me a new fur coat for my birthday.
You listen to me, Blanche. Things are going to be different around here. From now on, I'm going to spend the money and you can do the working.
What?
I'm going to blow every penny on myself. Buy all the things I've always longed for.
Stop yelling at me like that.
I don't care. You've had it coming to you for a long time.
I've never been so unhappy in all my life. You think I had to meet a man with such an awful disposition? I wish I had known that you were such a terrible, low-down character before I married you.
Go on, you knew it, and so did everybody else.
How any man could have such a savage temper. Believe me, John Bickerson, I'd pack up and go home to my mother if it wasn't for one thing.
What's that?
My mother packed up and went home to her mother.
Listen, Blanche, do you think I enjoy sitting up all night fighting like this? Have you ever asked yourself the reason why we argue so much?
I can't understand it.
Well, just think for a minute. Why is it that an easygoing fella, a guy who would run a mile to avoid a fight, why is it that I turn into a demon every night of my life?
You've got me, John.
That's the reason. Good night, Blanche.
Good night, John.
John and Blanche Dickerson, the original love children. Did she hit him with her peace beads? Here's a note of encouragement for kids who are having a rough time in school and thinking about dropping out. Thomas Edison, according to a recent survey, was the worst speller in his class. General George Patton didn't learn to read until he was 12 and was a slow reader all his life. And Albert Einstein couldn't remember names, dates, and places. Hang in there, kids. Our name is Monitor. The date is November 9th, and we're heard nationwide. In Bakersfield, California, KGEE serves the southern San Joaquin Valley. I'm your host, Ted Steele.
Stop! Don't touch that guy! We'll be back on Monitor in just a while on NBC.
The great girl singers can be identified by their first names only. Barbara, Ella, Judy, Sarah, Pearl. Now add this one. Beyond.
Promises, promises, I'm up through with promises, promises now. I don't know how I got the nerve to walk out. If I shout, remember, I feel free. Now I can look at myself and be proud. I'm laughing out loud. Promises, this is where those promises, promises end. I don't pretend that what was wrong can be right. Every night I sleep now, no more lies. Things that I promised myself fell apart, but I found my heart. Oh, promises, they're kind of promises. Promise myself. their kind of promises can just destroy your life. Oh, promises, those kind of promises take down the joy from life. Oh, promises, promises, my kind of promises can lead to joy and hope and love. Yes, love.
One of the reasons advanced for the unrest on college campuses recently is their alleged resistance to being regarded as punch cards in a vast academic computer. Now, apparently, two young men, Ray Kurzweil and Bernard Klein, are going against that trend and toward more computerization. They've organized a service which uses computer techniques to select the right college for the right student, and monitors Linda Sutter, who's never been bent, stapled, mutilated, or spindled in her life, got the story.
Ray, let's start with you. How does Select work?
Well, we have in our computer 2 million items of information on all 3,000 colleges in the United States. Student fills out a special Select questionnaire, which asks from him everything about himself, everything about the school he'd like to attend, his entire high school record and test scores. And this is fed into our computer, which looks at every school for him and then selects the 10 to 15 where he would probably be best suited for.
What are the kinds of facts about a college or a university that you feed into this computer?
Well, we interviewed hundreds of students and guidance counselors and college admissions officers and really pooled everything which is pertinent to selecting a college, the size, the entire social life, geographic location, courses, everything about the academics of the university, the, all kinds of things about the campus and about its location and cultural opportunities, campus activities, really anything that you might be interested in choosing a college.
Did you two do it yourself?
Right.
We organized the project, and we hired about 20 Harvard students to collect the enormous amount of information that is required.
All right, let's take a specific example. Let's take you, Bernard. Now, you're interested in business and marketing and finance, but you're also interested, I gather, in sports and science and newspaper reporting and music. Do you think that the computer would have you end up at MIT where you are?
It certainly would. I have processed my own application several times because my interests have changed. And even though many of my interests have changed, the top school remains MIT, and some of the other schools have changed from time to time.
Bernard, how many students have used Select so far?
So far, about 4,500 students have used Select, and I expect this total to increase markedly during the next few months.
Out of these 4,500 students who've used Select so far, have there been any unsuccessful incidents at all?
Well, I'd say that there are some. There'll always be 1 or 2% who aren't satisfied, and we check through them, and usually it's because they forgot what they put down, or they changed their mind, or they simply made a mistake. If the student is careful and gives it careful thought in filling out the questionnaire, we've had some very enthusiastic people who've gone to the colleges we've suggested and are really grateful to the program.
Bernard, I should imagine there'd be an awful lot of people interested in getting into college who'd like to take advantage of Select. How would they get a hold of the Select questionnaire?
Through the nation's guidance counselors or directly from Harcourt, Brace, and World in New York. I would suggest that an interested high school student first go to his guidance counselor and see if he has the questionnaire. And if he cannot get one through his guidance counselor, he should write to Harcourt, Brace, and World, 757 3rd Avenue, New York City, New York.
Thank you both. We've been talking with Ray Kurzweil and Bernard Klein. We've had computers to answer our phones and computers to tell us who to go out with. Now their computer, Select, can tell us where we should go to school. This is Linda Sutter reporting for This Younger Generation on Monitor.
Here's Doc Severinsen. And there's a wild rumor that if you listen closely to the chorus, you can hear the barbershop baritones of Johnny and Ed.
Hey,
Ted Steele, and I know when to leave at 16 minutes before the hour, but let's get back together here on the Monitor Beacon.
How does your child see? You really can't say because you can't look through his eyes. And because he can't look through anyone else's eyes, he has no way of knowing if he's seeing as he should. Because he has nothing to compare to his own vision, a child assumes that the way he sees is the way everyone sees. For this reason, a child can have faulty vision and not complain about it. To be certain that complaints are non-existent and not just unheard, the American Optometric Association suggests annual professional vision examinations for all school children.
What's happening? The Good and the Groovy on the Jack Hayes Thing. This is Jack, inviting you to happen with us, weekdays, 9 to noon, right here on WNBC, Radio 66, New York.
WNBC, Radio 66, New York.
That's heard more and more often wherever country and western music is played. Sonny James?
By your side, satisfied through and through, 'cause I was born to be with you.
It's a well-known fact that all honeymooners like to get off by themselves in a quiet, discreet hideaway where no undue attention is given to their newly acquired status. Well, if that's what honeymooners of the future have in mind, the man for them to avoid is Herr Bodo von Alfensleben. Mr. Bodo, as he's called, is a host at a Bermuda hotel, which is a favorite of honeymooning couples. And he seems to specialize in giving them undue attention. He shared his observations with Monitor's Bob Montgomery. No names, please, Bodo.
Mr. Bodo, you've been host to honeymooners from nations throughout the world. I understand you have many anecdotes which even illustrate the differences between newlyweds.
Well, funny things do happen. You have many weeping brides who are very sad about being away from home for the first time. They want to call a mom and they want to take the next plane back. I had one couple who were quite upset about having to share a room together. At least they didn't want officially to be known to share a room together. And they were upset at me, and I said, we've never done things like that. And naturally, we told our travel agents, you want two different rooms. So you can't put us in the same room. We never do things like that. I said, all right. So I gave him two rooms, one in one wing on the seventh floor and one in another wing in the third floor. And I guess I used one day and one the other. As a matter of fact, during the stay, a shoe salesman from Canada came in, and I was full up. And I said, look, chum, if you can get up very early in the morning, I might have a room for you very late tonight. And I found out which of the two rooms I used. And then I sold the other room to the shoe salesman who got out at 5 next morning, and a young honeymoon couple never knew anything about it. I had a very interesting honeymoon couple 2 weeks ago. I believe the bridegroom was 79 and the bride was 74. They had a ball.
Wow.
They went diving. She had never been underwater before in her life.
Oh, boy.
They went helmet diving. She couldn't even swim, but they went helmet diving. And they did everything you could possibly. They went to the nightclub every night. They went fishing and sightseeing, sailing, and they want to come back at Christmas.
Mr. Bodo, I find this hard to believe, but I was told by a friend of yours that there was a honeymoon couple recently from one of the United States that had chaperones with them. Is this true, and who were they?
That's true, Bob. Actually, the parents of the groom came along. They came from Wisconsin. Father, very tall, fine gentleman, stern-looking gentleman with his wife. Very nice, but very serious people indeed. They would come for dinner together quite early. And toward the end of dinner, Pa would say, well, son, you better have no coffee. It keeps you awake too long. It's time to go home now. And
wow.
Then they would walk down back to their room in one column, like a little procession. And next morning at about 6:30, Pa would suggest to have a walk and would make him get up and have a little early morning walk before breakfast. And then 8 o'clock, they had breakfast all together.
Chaperones for a honeymoon, what next? What do you feel attracts so many honeymooners to Bermuda, where you're now the host at the Prince's Hotel?
Bermuda is a very romantic island. It's unspoiled. It's not commercialized. It has no neon signs. It has still many, many private coves and beaches and bays. They can easily disappear. Beautiful pink sand beaches, lovely walks, still the old horses and carriages. It's very romantic, Bermuda. Very beautiful.
We've been chatting with Mr. Bodo G. von Elvensleben, a man who's hosted thousands of honeymooners in hotels he's managed on two continents. This is Bob Montgomery for Monitor.
I know an 87-year-old man who married an 85-year-old woman, and they spent the first 2 weeks of their honeymoon getting out of the car.
I love you, Alice, Pete Douglas, and so does Gertrude Stein. I love you, Alice, Pete Douglas. I'm gonna change your name to
I love you, Alice, be careful. I'm gonna change your name to mine. I love you.
has begun.
Incidentally, the subject of NBC News' second Sunday series is the sexual revolution. The hour-long program will examine the changing sex patterns of today's Americans of all ages, what is still considered taboo, and the steady trend toward relaxed permissive standards. Authorities in the field of social behavior will participate, along with a panel of teenagers and others. The Sexual Revolution, NBC Radio Network, tomorrow night, right after the hourly news, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
But proper, if the lady's chicer than chic, if her escorts must wear a topper, and each man's the man of the week, if she rides around in a brand new foreign car, the chances are the lady's a star. If the lady's brilliantly witty, if she makes the dialogue flash, if the lady's wave with a ditty makes the ditty seem like a smash, if her songs add up to a fancy repertoire, the chances are, if the lady's a star, if her smallest party is really extensive, of expensive caviar. If the lady's someone with the same credential, someone with the same essential, someone who is worshipped from above, she's a genuine, positive, totally marvelous.
Bobby Scott. Lovers by Roger Williams. You know, there was a story out of Buffalo, New York today reporting what the students there think school represents. Here are some of their one-sentence definitions. School is dropping all your books in the hall when you have a miniskirt on. School is being told to keep your love life out of school and you don't even have a love life. School is having a boy named Frank sit on your lunch. For the more significant side of the news, stay tuned for NBC News on the Hour next. I'm Ted Steele for Monitor.
We must take a station break. Don't turn your set off. Don't you make a mistake. Don't leave us behind. There's still lots more time.